Hi, this video is a part of a bigger collaboration between various YouTube history channels. Don't forget to click the link in the description or at the end of the video to watch the entire playlist. The video before this one by History Time covers the Abbasid Revolution. This video, as the title suggests, is about Arab agricultural revolution. Islam was born in Arabia, which didn't have that much agriculture. It had some, but not that much. But fortunately for the Muslims, not so much of those they conquered, Islam spread rapidly. Within a decade of Muhammad's death, Egypt, the Levant, Mesopotamia, and Persia were under Muslim control. These lands had much more agriculture. Egypt, for instance, was called the breadbasket of the Roman Empire, and Mesopotamia and the Levant were famously called the Fertile Crescent. Here, the Muslims encountered agriculture. Now, one of the most influential Islamic books about agriculture was written in the 10th century by a man called Ibn Bashiyah. The book is called Nabataean Agriculture. The very title of the book says a lot. In case you don't know, Nabataeans were Arabs who lived in northern Arabia, mostly in modern-day Jordan. These people had some really clever techniques for agriculture because their land was very dry. A lot of these techniques were adopted by the Muslims to serve other places in the Muslim world. As is the case with everything else that occurred during the Golden Age, agricultural revolution was a product of various cultures coming together in the Muslim world. Muslims had access to agricultural techniques used in Egypt, Persia, Arabia, Mesopotamia, and the Levant. But probably the most influential were the Indians. Persians regularly traded with Indians before the Muslims, and so they had learned a lot from them. But after the Muslims, it increased dramatically. Some of the crops that were taken from the Indians after Muslim conquests were sugarcane, cotton, watermelons, eggplants, spinach, artichokes, oranges, lemons, limes, bananas, mangoes, and coconut palms. These crops came to be planted in almost every place in the Islamic world. Not only crops, but the Muslims learned other things from the Indians, like how to cultivate these plants and later use techniques learned from them to increase their own production. Before this, the people in these regions mostly cultivated crops in around the time of autumn rains and harvested them in the spring. During the summer, most land was free. Some summer crops were cultivated though, as mentioned in the Roman manuals, like barley, sesame, and various legumes, but summer was, for the most part, a dead season. With the arrival of new crops, however, this changed. In particular, rice, cotton, sugarcane, eggplant, watermelon, and sorghum became summer crops. Hence, in the Muslim world, a system of crop rotation was introduced, as Andrew M. Watson writes. The opening of a summer season was one of several factors permitting systems of rotation, which made more intense use of the land. Whereas in Roman, Byzantine, and Jewish agricultural traditions, the normal practice was to crop the ground only once every 2 years. Under very exceptional circumstances, only once every year. There appeared all over Islamic world rotations in which land was cropped four times or more instead of once in a 24-month period. Thus, winter wheat could be followed by summer sorghum, as one traveler observed in Cyprus, where the practice had no doubt been introduced during the Arab occupation, a summer crop of cotton could be just fitted in between two crops of winter wheat grown in successive years. In parts of Yemen, wheat yielded two harvests a year on the same land, as did rice in Iraq. Where plants with a shorter growing season were used, these lands could be cropped three or more times a year. The variations were endless. All these crops, well, they needed a lot of water. With the exception of Mesopotamia, most areas didn't have advanced irrigation techniques. There were some devices used for various purposes, but their usage wasn't widespread. Canals and dams were in disrepair before the Muslim conquest, because the Byzantines and the Sassanids had been fighting each other for a long time and neglected the infrastructure of Egypt, the Levant, and Mesopotamia. During the early years of the conquest, Muslims did too. But as lands became more consolidated, they started to repair older methods of artificial irrigation and started to bring new ones. Various new things were introduced, such as the underground canal, or qanat as the Arabs called it, and other devices which used animal or water power to move water from where it was to where it needed to be. Various wind pumps and other animal and hydro-powered devices came to be widely used. Al-Jazari alone invented at least five different machines to carry water. One of his most fascinating inventions for lifting water was the Sakia chain pump. Basically, it's a series of gears that can be turned by an animal, which would rotate a chain of cups or other containers, lifting water up. It could also be powered by water itself, removing the animal. This device was widely used, even up till the modern era. I will discuss more about Al-Jazari's inventions in his own video. Many new cities were founded and many older ones obtained a new level of importance. These cities were mostly inland, while coastal cities like Alexandria and Antioch did suffer. Thanks to this revolution, cities could afford to feed a greater number of people. Samarra, which was a city specifically founded to serve as the Abbasid Caliphate's capital, had a population of around 1 million people, and it served as the Caliphate's capital for less than a century. So very quickly, the Abbasids were able to found a new city, migrate a large number of people there, and feed them, all because of the increased agricultural yield that they had now. Probably the region that benefited the most from this was Al-Andalus, Muslim Spain. At the time of the conquest, an exaggerated report says that there wasn't a single working canal in all of Spain. Al-Andalus, while rich in its soil fertility, wasn't properly cultivated. The Visigoths had ignored it because of their infighting. As early as Abdurrahman's reign and the establishment of the Emirate of Cordoba, Arabs were starting to revitalize its agriculture. When Abdurrahman commissioned his palace, he had some men sent to Syria to bring back trees and plants from there to recreate a glimmer of his homeland there in Spain. Over the following centuries, a great number of agricultural innovations were brought to Spain from the rest of the Muslim world. Various water mills and other devices were brought there as early as the Umayyad Emirate's reign. Before Toledo fell to the Christians in 1085 CE, there is said to have been a 90-cubit high water wheel on the river Tagus. As I mentioned before, Abdurrahman had seeds and plants brought from Syria to his palace, but it wasn't the only place he brought it from. Throughout Muslim rule in Spain, rulers had exotic plants brought to their palaces. These royal gardens slowly took the role of botanical gardens, where experiments were done on plants to get better yield. The decline of the agricultural revolution came, like everything else in the Golden Age, slowly but lastingly. First of all, there were various invaders. The Seljuks, for instance, who took over Iraq and Persia from the Abbasids, weren't particularly supportive of agriculture because they had been nomads and relied on grasslands more than crops. Andalusian agriculture fell due to the Reconquista. For instance, while a city was under siege, its water supply was often cut. Aqueducts were destroyed and never repaired. To top it all off, the act of God, the Mongols, the disaster that they were, killed so many people in the Middle East and the rest of the world that the entire systems and supply chains were destroyed. It was kind of like Thanos' snap. In Baghdad alone, nearly 1 million people were slaughtered. Canals were destroyed as a military tactic, but were never repaired. Labor got more expensive, and no one had the money to prop up the infrastructure again. The final blow, according to Andrew M. Watson, was the discovery of the New World. Famously, cotton, rice, and sugar were easier to grow there, and so they were moved. The Mediterranean basin lost a lot of its agricultural value. New crops were introduced from the New World to the old one. For instance, tomatoes, tobacco, potatoes, etc. However, the same Muslims who were once eager to learn new things and experiment with them were not as receptive as we aren't to this day. See you next time. Don't forget to watch the rest of the Revolution Collaboration videos. The one after this one is by History House Productions and covers the Hussite Revolution.